Today is October 31st. We're going to start on chapter 12. That is page 104. So this textbook actually does things a little differently. They have the nervous systems organized a little different than the way we cover them. What I'm going to do is I'm going to hit the central nervous system here first with the brain and spinal cord, and then we're going to actually go into 13, which will cover a little bit more on the brain and spinal cord. And then you'll notice if you flip on over several pages, we eventually get to chapter 14, and that's going to be the autonomic nervous system. So the organization that we follow here is a little different from how your book is set up. Okay, so at the top of page 104, we're going to talk first about the bony protection that's on your brain and your spinal cord. Of course, there's a skull that creates a cranial cavity. Your vertebral column creates a spinal or vertebral cavity. So we know that bones protect these two special organs, brain and spinal cord. What we haven't yet talked about is any of the structures of these organs. So we're going to actually hit the spinal cord first, and then we'll cover the brain. So, you know, the spinal cord, you know, doesn't get the respect that the brain gets because, of course, your brain is processing all this information, making decisions for you on a daily basis. But the spinal cord actually does a lot of that as well. And it's afforded a lot of the same protection that the brain has around it, too. So there's, you know, a lot of membranes that wrap fluids that are insulating and protecting that spinal cord. So that's what we're going to find when we travel inside that vertebral column. So you'll notice under the spinal cord structure, it extends around 18 inches from the base of your skull. It travels all the way down to around where your waist is, and then it splits up there. So do you know the name of the hole at the base of your skull? Foramen magnum, good. So that's where the spinal cord exits. It travels inside the vertebral foramen of your vertebrae. And around your waist, we then see the spinal cord start to split up into these what they call a horse's tail. There's a cone-shaped ending down around your waist. And that cone-shaped ending is called the conus medullaris. You can't really tell from that picture, but the branches of your spinal cord are no longer called spinal cord, they're now called spinal nerves. So there's branches of nerves that come off the end of your spinal cord, like this, and now they travel down your legs, they innervate some of your lower organs, and there's really no further spinal cord after you get to vertebrae L1 or L2. So around the lower lumbar region, we're going to find that the spinal cord terminates, and we no longer have it, we just have this spinal nerve set up. And we call this branch ending here that you see the cauda equina. Okay, so you may note on your worksheet there that we end up having no more spinal cord around L1 or L2. We end up having just a branched ending, that cauda equina. Horses are set up with a blanket on their back. Sometimes if they're cold, we put a blanket on them. The spinal cord is kind of made the same way. Cauda equina means horse's tail, and there's actually a blanket, well, it's kind of a fibrous covering, that acts as a shield or a covering over the end of this whole tail-like ending of your spinal cord. So you'll notice the term there, filum terminale, is actually a little connective tissue covering that protects the end of your spinal cord. So it's like a sheath or a fibrous covering. I'm going to talk to you about the coverings on the brain and spinal cord by showing you this picture here. This is, of course, the brain, and they've got a shortened piece of the spinal cord. We actually have three meninges, or membrane layers, covering your brain and spinal cord. They're synonymous with each other, meaning they continue down your brain to your spinal cord, so they're all one massive covering that works together. You'll notice in order from the outside, we have a dura mater, we have an arachnoid, sometimes just called arachnoid or arachnoid mater, and then we have the deepest layer, which is a pia mater. So matter itself means mother. The prefix there, the first word, dura, means tough mother. Okay, so you've got the tough mother that's the outermost covering. Arachnoid is a spider web-like covering. And pia means soft. So the soft matter or soft mother is our innermost coverings. Let me pull up a different picture. I think it does a better job at showing you those three layers. Okay, so outside we have the bony protection. This could be brain and or spinal cord. You'll notice the dura mater is the membrane connected to that bone. It's sitting right up underneath the bone. It's a tough, leathery covering, kind of like wax paper. And so it's meant to be the tough, outermost protection for your brain or spinal cord. The next layer you've got is called the arachnoid mater. And between the arachnoid and pia mater, you'll notice something that looks like a spider web. And that's a space that's actually found there between arachnoid and pia mater. And there's a fluid that circulates in that space. Do you know the name of that fluid? Brain fluid, right? Cerebrospinal fluid. So it's found in the arachnoid matter of both brain and spinal cord coverings. Okay, so you'll notice that term there, cerebrospinal fluid, or CSF, is in that arachnoid layer. The deepest of the three layers is called pia mater. It's a soft, thin tissue that covers the brain and spinal cord. Okay, and if you were to try to remove it, it would be like plucking away a layer of saran wrap. I got a tickle in my throat, and you know where that goes, right? Ooh, I got a cough. Okay, so in this picture you see dura mater on the right hand side. You'll notice it's a tough covering. It is literally a tough layer. And the pia mater on the left hand side, there is literally like a shrink wrap. You cannot remove the pia mater without plucking away brain or spinal cord tissue along with it. Okay, grab me a cough drop here before I start a good cough session. All right, so let's go back to that other slide. Do y'all have any questions so far about those three layers? All right, so this picture is color-coded. You'll notice that there are four main regions of spinal nerves that branch off this spinal cord. And you've got a cervical region that sits up near the neck. Where's the thoracic region? Upper back, right? And where would you find lumbar region of your spinal cord? Lower back, right? And then down below, even further, toward where your, I don't mean to be crude here, but where your butt crack starts, that is where you're gonna find the sacral nerves and coccygeal nerves. So I'd like to tell you about the naming scheme here. They're color-coded on this picture. You will notice that the blue ones up there at the top are your cervicals, the green ones here are thoracic, the yellow lumbar. There's actually seven cervical spinal nerves. There are 12 thoracic spinal nerves, 5 lumbar nerves, 5 or so sacral and coccygeal nerves down at the bottom. Now, if you have trouble remembering the numbering scheme, just remember the times for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. 7 cervical, 12 thoracic, and 5 lumbar. 7, 12, and 5 are the numbers here for our cervical, thoracic, and spinal lumbar nerves. Oh, I'm sorry, 8, not 7. You probably noticed that in your paper, right? So this is really tight here to look at. I do want to mention that the cervical spinal nerves emerge above the vertebrae for which they are named. So very top one there is C1. It actually emerges above the C1 cervical vertebrae. What is the other name for that C1 vertebrae? Atlas or axis?
Atlas.
Good. So let's just put C1 there. The spinal nerves that come off above are called C1. Just carry this down a bit. I want to get down to the bottom of this whole thing. Okay, so there are 7 cervical vertebrae. There are, in fact, 8 cervical spinal nerves. So this last cervical spinal nerve that comes off down here is actually sitting on top of thoracic 1. So the naming scheme is a little wacky. The cervical spinal nerves sit above the vertebrae for which they're named. That happens to change there with C8 because, you know, it's kind of an oddball. We only have 7 cervical vertebrae, but we've got those 8 spinal nerves. Now we switch the naming scheme. The cervical spinal nerve is the last one here. Below T1, we now have a T1 spinal nerve. So if you continue from that point down, you know, if you go on down to your lumbars and your sacral regions, those spinal nerves are named for the vertebrae for which they sit below. So let me repeat this. These 6 or 7 here, these 7 cervical spinal nerves are actually above the vertebrae for which they're named. C8's an oddball. And then starting with your thoracics, from that point all the way down, the name of the nerve below that vertebrae is what we're getting that name, that number from. So the cervicals sit above their vertebrae, the thoracics and lumbar sit below their vertebrae. So if somebody has, say, damage to a C3 spinal nerve, then we know that spinal nerve is emerging above where that vertebrae sits. So just a little wacky there about a naming scheme. All right, so let's talk about spinal nerves. So these spinal nerves emerge through holes between the vertebrae. Do you know the name of the hole that's found through which that spinal nerve will emerge? Intervertebral foramen, right. So that little hole where that nerve comes out is called an intervertebral foramen. You only can see that hole when you've got the whole spine articulated together. You can't just take a single vertebrae and say, well, there's the hole, because you've got to have the whole assembly there to be able to see it. These spinal nerves that emerge from your spinal cord are what we call mixed nerves. And by the word mixed, we mean there's both sensory and motor neurons found within that nerve. Okay, so that's an important thing. There's both sensory and motor neurons in a mixed nerve. Every one of these 31 pairs of spinal nerves are considered to be a mixed nerve. Okay. So let's talk about the setup for your spinal cord and spinal nerves. There's some information at the bottom of that page, top of the next page, but what I think we probably want to do is turn over and take a look at this picture that's found on page 106, because that'll help us understand all the parts of the spinal nerve, the spinal cord, and so forth. First of all, let me orient you to the way this picture should be looked at. If you've got holes punched in this picture, well, I don't know, maybe yours is on the same side as mine. Okay, so yours is right. I added this probably with the most recent copy of this thing. If you don't have one, there is one bottom of page 105. I'm going to draw it on the board. You're welcome to draw with me. But if you do have this picture, make sure these bumps, these pieces here, are facing the top of your picture. Okay. So if you do have this picture, just make sure these bumps are facing the top. Let's get rid of the screen. Anybody need to do the final form? All right, first thing I'm going to look at is that gray matter inside your spinal cord. We're going to draw that first if you want to draw with me. And then I'm going to put the white matter around on the outside. And that'll take care of our spinal cord. I'm going to put a hole here in the middle. And then we're going to take care of some spinal nerves. So the picture on the bottom of page 105 is already labeled for you. Let's start with the spinal cord first. Is it part of your central nervous system or peripheral nervous system?
Central.
It is central. Good. All right, so what's easy to spot here inside the spinal cord is a butterfly-shaped gray area, and we call that area the gray matter. And inside that gray matter, there's a hole in the center. That hole is actually where spinal fluid, that cerebrospinal fluid we talked about before, will circulate down your spinal column. So we can go ahead and label that hole. It's called the gray, it's called the central canal, and it's inside that gray commissure, which is a bridged area. That hole in the middle is your central canal, and it's inside that bridged area, which is called the gray commissure. This gray matter looks somewhat like a butterfly, sometimes like an H. It depends on where you take a sample from the spinal cord. And so there are three primary regions we're going to look at. There is a dorsal region, a ventral region, and then there's also a lateral region. So what we need to know is which side of this picture is dorsal. Well, dorsal is just a fancy word that means what? Back. So that's why I had you label the picture toward the top. This is your dorsal side, and the way I know that is I look for this bump here on the spinal nerve, and that's called the dorsal root ganglion. So that's what I was looking for to help me orient how to hold that picture. Okay, so that means down here toward the bottom of this picture, this is the ventral side, which is just another fancy word meaning what? Anterior. Now that I know my back from my front, we can label those three parts of your gray matter. This gray matter is all of this stuff in here that looks like a butterfly or an H. So our dorsal horn is this piece that sticks off the backside here. Ventral horn is the bottom side. Of course, that means the bump in the middle there is called our lateral horn, which I don't think they label in the picture on the bottom of page 105. Okay, so just to repeat what we've covered so far, We're in the spinal cord. We're looking at the gray matter, which has an H or a butterfly shape. We've got the hole in the center there, the central canal. Cerebrospinal fluid travels in that hole. We also have gray commissure, which is this bridge connecting the left and right sides. Okay? And each of these pieces here that sticks off is called a horn. The piece sticking off toward the back side is dorsal, lateral here in the middle, and then ventral horn sticks off down at the front side of that spinal cord. All right, so there are also white matter columns that surround this gray matter. So these columns imply something that travels up and down, right? If you think about columns on a house, they travel up and down. Well, that's in fact what the columns of white matter do. They carry information up and down the spinal cord. So when you're thinking about, you know, stubbing your toe and that information traveling to your brain, it travels in columns up to your spinal cord and then back down if need be. So where should I place the dorsal columns of the white matter? Toward the dorsal side, right? So all this stuff back in here, this white matter area, this region is called our dorsal column. All right. Where should we place the lateral columns of white matter? Well, on your side, yeah, where those lateral sides are, we can place lateral columns over there. Just keep in mind that columns are white matter, horns are gray matter. All right, and where should we find our ventral columns? Bottom, yep. Question?
You're looking at the dorsal horn and the ventral horn. You can connect those with the extensions?
Yeah, the pieces that kind of stick out. Those, that's what I look for. It's just the piece that sticks out. Okay, so far so good. That's right.
And then go inside and start lengthening things.
That's what I would do. Because if you don't know back from front, then you have no way to know. Because that could flip upside down. You wouldn't know what parts you had. Yeah. So now that we have a little bit labeled on this thing, let's talk about what these areas do. And the gray matter information is at the top of 105. Let me start you with the anterior or ventral horn. You'll notice it says there, that part of your gray matter contains cell bodies of SNS motor neurons. Let me translate that. SNS stands for somatic nervous system. All right, so if you're talking somatic nervous system, you were talking about conscious voluntary control. Would that be smooth muscles, skeletal muscles, cardiac muscles? Skeletal, yeah. So down there on the ventral horn, I'm going to make just a note. I'm going to put voluntary motor. SNS just, you know, triggers my memory that that is a somatic nervous system job. And of course, we only innervate skeletal muscles because they're the only muscles that are under our conscious voluntary control. The lateral horns, you'll notice, contain cell bodies of ANS sympathetic motor neurons. Okay, whoa, that's a lot to think about there. ANS stands for autonomic nervous system. ANS stands for autonomic nervous system. And what we mean by sympathetic is that's a particular branch. We'll talk about it later on, but for right now, we'll just mention that this is involuntary control of muscles. So what kinds of muscles are involuntarily controlled? Good. Those smooth muscles in our intestines, the cardiac muscle of our heart, all of that is involuntarily controlled, and the control starts here with this lateral horn of the gray matter. So far we know that skeletal muscle control comes from the ventral horn, whereas involuntary smooth muscle cardiac control comes from that lateral horn. You okay? It is. It makes you just want to go to bed, especially when y'all got tests today. All right, last horn here is dorsal or posterior, and it contains interneurons. And you may recall from our last chapter, what is the function of an interneuron? Good. Coordinates between motor and sensory. Okay, and we know they're always found in your central nervous system, and of course that's where we are. Interneurons always coordinate between motor and sensory neurons. These lateral columns on either side of your spinal cord, their job is to be sensory pathways. They take information up to your brain. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. Okay, so those lateral columns are sensory pathways taking information up to your brain. Okay, so we have the ventral and dorsal root, and I'm going to flip you back a page. Bottom of page 104 has dorsal root, ventral root, dorsal root ganglion. We need to label those now. Earlier, we used that bump on the back as our, you know, landmark to know how to orient this picture. That is your dorsal root ganglion. So now that we've got our dorsal root ganglion, we know how to orient this whole thing. That is a collection of cell bodies in our spinal nerve, and specifically, it's a piece of your dorsal root that's coming out from, you know, this a whole spinal nerve, spinal cord setup. So I would also label that dorsal root up there. The bottom piece down toward the ventral side, of course, is a ventral root. And then where they come together, this is called a spinal nerve. And at that point, you know, we have a mixed nerve. And what does it mean to be mixed? That means you've got sensory and motor. Okay, so you've got both sensory and motor mixed together in that spinal nerve. All right, so the dorsal root, you'll notice, contains sensory neurons, ventral root carries motor neurons, so I'm going to draw an arrow here of the direction that information travels. Information in your dorsal root is actually going to be carried into your spinal cord. And of course, ventral root carries motor information away from your spinal cord. Let me help you link all this together, because right now this is just a jumble of words, doesn't mean a whole lot, doesn't make a lot of sense. Let me use an example for you. We're going to talk later on in this chapter about something called a reflex pathway, and I'm going to kind of just loosely introduce it now using this picture. If you've ever stubbed your toe or put your hand on a hot stove, you have jerked away from that stimulus of pain without even thinking about it. In fact, you jerk so quickly that your brain doesn't even know what you did. It hasn't had time to reach your brain unless you just saw what happened. So let's say that you put your hand on a hot stove. Maybe you just didn't see what you were doing. You accidentally reached down, and instead of picking up a frying pan, you laid your hand on the hot stove. That information is going to travel, you know, up the spinal nerve in your arm. It's going to come towards your spinal cord, and here it comes in by way of your dorsal root. Okay, so in comes this sensory information. Depending on the reflex, we'll talk about that later, you may or may not stop at one of these interneurons. But if you do stop at one of these interneurons, what do you think the interneuron will do with that information? Send it back out. Sensory to motor, so we need to connect with one of these motor pathways. Which motor pathway is going to make you jerk your hand away from a hot stove? Yes, skeletal. It's got to be the pathway that innervates skeletal muscle. So this ventral horn down at the bottom is going to get the message from your interneuron. Boom, here you go. Right back out that ventral root. This time the message is heading to the muscles in your arm, and the message to those muscles is move away. And so you've jerked your hand away from that hot stove. The brain has not known anything of this at all. So all you do is hand on the hot stove. In comes information from the sensory pathway. We may or may not stop at the interneuron. If we do, the interneuron says to the appropriate motor pathway, do something. Since we're talking skeletal muscle, we hit this ventral root, down ventral horn, we come out the ventral root, and of course back to the appropriate muscles, and we jerk away from that stimulus. So if you've ever done something like this, you have jerked so hard and so fast that you know what you've done, right? You know the pain's coming, but you know that you've moved your hand away from being further damaged, okay? So that pathway involves that gray matter. Let me also show you how the white matter is involved. If you've ever done something like this where you've stubbed your toe or burned your hand, you know there's a split second before this excruciating pain hits, right? So this reflex took care of you moving really fast. What takes a little longer is here comes that sensory information in. You just burned your hand. The interneurons not only send this message to get you to move, these interneurons are also going to send a message across this gray fissure. It's like a bridge right here. And up this opposite side of your spinal cord. And so now this message is traveling in a sensory pathway up to your brain. So give it about a second later, oh, the ache starts, right? That's because you're having to travel in that white matter in the spinal cord. Because it's white matter, are we talking about myelination or none? And that still takes a second, right? So you stub your toe, you're traveling as fast as you possibly can in myelinated white matter, jumping from node of Ranvier to the next, and it still takes a second to get to your brain to feel that pain. So ultimately, you know, when you look down and realize, oh my, I have a mess here, I really hurt myself, then you can bring messages back down the spinal cord, across and out that ventral root. But again, that's a voluntary conscious decision that your brain has made. Let me show you those ascending sensory tracts. We skipped that, and it is on the top of page 105, actually about halfway down. You'll notice in the middle of your page there, ascending tracts, there are two sensory pathways that carry information to your brain. One of them is called a spinothalamic pathway. I know that's a horrible mouthful. And the other one is a worse one. It's called spinocerebellar pathway. These are both sensory pathways that take information to your brain. So when we're talking about these ascending tracts, we know they're in the lateral columns of your white matter. And they're taking a special or a specific type of information to your brain for processing. And here's color coding. You can actually see what region of the body they're typically carrying information from. I didn't tell you specifically where the descending tracts are because they're scattered. There's some back here in the lateral columns, some more over here in the ventral columns. But nonetheless, descending tracts carry motor information down your spinal cord. Okay, so let's talk about your thalamus. If we are taking information to your thalamus over a spinothalamic pathway, notice on your sheet that it is specifically for pain and temperature information. Okay, if I laid my hand on a hot stove, I've killed both those right there, right? I've got both pain and temperature that I'm carrying to my brain and spinal, or up my brain from the spinal cord. All right, so spinothalamic pathway takes information here to this piece of your brain tissue. It's called the thalamus, and that thalamus is a relay center for incoming sensory info. Sight, sound, touch all routes through that thalamus. In fact, the only sense that does not route through your thalamus is smell. Okay, so when you touch a hot stove, that information comes up your spinal cord to your brain, to that thalamus, and your thalamus relays it to the right part of your brain. And it's actually a piece right around where your crown would sit, okay? So spinothalamic pathway is a sensory tract. That means we're taking information to your brain. And what specific information is carried to your thalamus?
Hot,
cold, and pain. Right, so pain and temperature are carried to your thalamus of the brain. All right, notice the next one there. It's the spinocerebellar pathway. That takes information to this piece of your brain tissue on the back here. That has nothing to do with pain and temperature. Instead, what does your cerebellum regulate? Muscles, yeah, muscles and coordination of those muscles. So, if you're thinking about where you're standing or where you're sitting, your body's position in space is managed partly by that cerebellum. What happens to people when they're drunk?
They can't keep their balance.
Can't keep their balance. That's your cerebellum, right? So if you close your eyes and touch a finger to your nose, you can probably do it completely fine with your nose, I mean with your eyes shut, right? Okay, because that's because you're proprioceptors in your muscles and joints tell your brain where your body parts are in space. So the part of your brain regulating that is your spinocerebellar pathway. All right, so if you're drunk, if you're medicated, whatever the case may be, then your proprioceptors in that brain tissue don't get the right information, and therefore you're a little off balance and a little stumbly, right? So that spinocerebellar pathway carries information of a different nature to that cerebellum back here. All right. So just to repeat, we've got two pathways in your spinal cord. The blue ones in this picture are what we call our ascending pathways. They are sensory in nature. Does that mean information is going to your brain or from your brain? To your brain, good. There are two separate tracts. We have a spinothalamic tract and a spinocerebellar tract. Which one tells you about the position of your joints? Cerebellar, good. And which pathway tells us about a hot stove? Thalamic, good. So any information going to your brain travels in an ascending tract, that is sensory information to your brain. The red pieces in this picture are descending tracts. They carry motor information from your brain.